When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall, just for what I did well. And there's some stories I can tell you.
It's a final word, World Cup Daily, day 45. We're there. It is the final. India, as expected, are there. They're playing against Australia. It's happening tomorrow on Sunday. Jeff's there, of course. We're here for Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. An unusual time for us to be recording. 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning in London. And Jeff, I don't think I've ever hit the recorder on at this time for a podcast with you. Sometimes Saturday afternoon if we're running late on story time or something like that. But it needs must, because the final is but 24 hours away. Hello to you.
Hello to you. I try to avoid doing anything before or at 9 o'clock on any morning. It's not a time when people should be doing things. There should be double digits in the hour before anything happens. Nobody should be at work before 10 a.m. We live in a monstrous, monstrous society that allows these things to happen. And hopefully that can change as we squash down, as we get to the four-day working week, the 5 or 6 hour working day. We've all been doing this stuff for too long. I didn't intend to talk about this off the top, but they won the 8 hour day in what, 1865? And we're still working 8 hour days despite the productivity gains of many, many thousands of times over the years. It is a trap. It's a lie. And they've got us all locked in glass boxes. We don't even realize that we're in a cage. But here we are. Went to Pat Cummins' press conference this morning, which was at a civilized time of about 10:30. Yes, the Australian captain seemed very, very relaxed. The Rohit Sharma one hasn't happened, because with great, great ICC planning, Pat Cummins, 10:30 a.m., Rohit Sharma, 5:45 p.m. That's what you want with your captain's press conferences when you're trying to knock a preview together the day before the game.
Yeah, sounds about right. And the next thing you're going to move on to is luxury communism. That's for another day. This podcast will be focused squarely from this point on cricket. Or maybe not the goals I scored last night in five-a-side football. No, we won't talk about that either. No, 30-second summary of the hatful of goals. Now, the final is tomorrow. What we know from the interviews that have been done at the ground today as they're playing on pitch number 5. This is a used pitch. It was the one
by Lou Bega. Is that the one? A little bit of Andy Atkinson by my side.
A little bit of red soil. I'm not sure if it's a red soil or a black soil. I know at Ahmedabad that's quite a big deal. But just going through the numbers for the World Cup so far, no one's made 300 at Ahmedabad. It's the second lowest scoring ground. That's partially informed by the fact that Pakistan shat the bed against India there a couple of months ago. What was it? About a month and a half ago now. But that's the same pitch that India had so much success on there. I enjoyed the bit of Pat Cummins' press conference where he goes, "Oh, I think Pakistan played someone here." I'm not sure whether that was intentionally comedic or otherwise, but it read that way in the write-up of it, that it is a used pitch, but the conditions are going to be very different because it was hot then. And now, from what I gather, there's a bit of a the start of a bit of a winter chill of sorts. Maybe not cool conditions, but cooler than it was.
Cooler. I mean, the Kolkata game the other day was actually quite temperate. Australia got the advantage of bowling in those conditions where it wasn't actually that difficult in terms of the heat that some teams have faced. In terms of the pitch, I mean, I could see it from the stand today, but like, what do we know? What does anyone know about pitches? Nobody knows anything. It looked that kind of colour where you expect it to be a bit sticky and slow, but that's entirely speculative. I thought the Cummins line, I don't think he was trying to crack a joke at the time, but I suppose it could read like that. He's probably just actually can't remember who has played who where. But I was wondering, maybe it's a philosophical question more than a directly cricketing one, but how long needs to go between games before a pitch is no longer a used pitch? I mean, it was the 14th of October, I think, that game. So that's 34 days ago. If it's been sitting there growing grass in the meantime, is it now a fresh pitch again? I don't know. We should have asked when we had Carl McDermott on, the Lord's groundsman. We should have asked him about that. When does a pitch become fresh again?
Yeah, it's a fair point. I don't think it's anywhere near as big of a talking point as it was before the first semi-final for all the reasons that we outlined then. If there's anything in it, though, right, if there is, owing to the climactic conditions that are now further up north in India as well, whether there is a world where this pitch does seam around a little bit. And, of course, that would be to the advantage of Australia comparatively, because India have every box checked, but Australia need the ball to move around. We saw how effective they were against South Africa in the second semi-final up at Eden Gardens, where getting the ball moving early on was able provided them the chance to apply massive pressure inside the power play. And that wasn't the case, for a whole bunch of games that India have played in. Their semi-final against New Zealand, they were out of the block so quickly. And they did take early wickets against India. Again, it's a long time ago, but that group game where they had them three down inside two overs, that was also from a surface that gave a little bit to quicks under lights. So, yeah, I think if the pitch does have that component to it, it won't be balancing that's up on paper. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I said this yesterday on a show we were doing together, Jeff. If Australia were to beat India in this World Cup final, it is akin to when Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson, right? Like, this would be one of the greatest upsets in world sport history. This would be Miracle on Ice, 1980 Olympics, you know, cricket's equivalent of that, given how far ahead India are. I know it's a two-horse race in Australia and no poor team, but this says more about the dominance of India through the group stage and the semi-final, which I've read all this coverage saying, oh, what a close stoush it was. I mean, India won that by a fucking mile. They were never really threatened by New Zealand. They were always one wicket away from busting things open. They have been by far the dominant team. So with that comes pressure, home World Cup, extravagant pre-game entertainment and all these other bells and whistles, near enough 100,000 people there, maybe somewhere between 80,000 and 100,000 people there, depending on what attendance is reported from one end of the ground and all the rest of it. But, Jeff, that idea that Australia could be the beneficiary of the conditions is an interesting one.
I don't know. I mean, it didn't look like there was any kind of grassiness that might be of any use, and I suspect they'll cut the pitch again. You know, they'll give it another mow. Cummins said that they weren't making any decisions on teams until tonight, local time, after, you know, that they were pretty happy that most things that had been done to the surface would have been done. But, in terms of it being a huge upset, I'm not sure yet because okay, you have an Indian team that's dominated the World Cup to this point. They haven't won it, and they haven't won one since 2011. They haven't won a knockout bit of silverware since the Champions Trophy in 2013. They lost the Champs Trophy in 2017. They've lost in World Cup knockouts since. And we've seen many, many examples over the years of teams that are dominant through the stage of a season. You think of it in, so I hesitate to raise the sport, but Australian rules football, where you have a season followed by a knockout. We've seen a bunch of different teams dominate that home and away season and then get done in finals.
Do you want to raise it on me? 2008?
2008, 2009, St Kilda. You see these things happen where the team that should boss all of the knockout games doesn't end up doing it, sometimes only in the one that matters. So that's the bit for me. You know, if to talk about this Indian team in those terms, I think they need to win this final and then they need to carry on being that dominant force for the next 3 or 4 years and go through the early stages of the next World Cup in the same way. Then I'd be saying it's a huge underdog story to knock them off. I don't think it is yet because they haven't won anything that counts.
I guess I'm being a little bit playful when raising those historical comparisons. Of course, in a cricketing context, it wouldn't be the greatest surprise of all time if Australia win a sixth World Cup, right? But I suppose the point I'm trying to emphasise is that India have been streets ahead of opposition in this tournament and they've got every base check. So you just go through the numbers here, right? So Kohli averaging 102, striking at 90. Rohit averaging 55 and striking at 124. Then you've got the bowling side of things. Shami's taken 23 wickets at 11. Bumrah's going at fours and it's taken 18 wickets along the way. That kind of means that you've got this Australian group who need to outperform the superstars of India, but in specific categories. So I see it as like, there's the Kohli Rohit bit. Well, okay then, that means that between Warner, Marsh and Head, they need to do better. Those three need to do better than those two. Shami against left-handers though, inside the power play, He's taken 4 wickets in 25 balls to left-handers in this tournament, bowling around the wicket. Yeah. And Australia have 2 left-handers opening the batting. The other
but
side,
he's going
to
bowl first change. He's probably not going to get first use. So by the usually Shami's coming on after 8 overs have been bowled. The way that Head and Warner have gone, if things have worked, they might have 80 in the bank by then. Or Rohit Sharma might be turning to Shami in the 3rd over, thinking, "Fucking hell, I've got to rein this back." Or it's Siraj and Bumrah taking early wickets. I mean, if those two of that top 3 go cheaply, Australia are cooked. I think their chances entirely depend on that top 3 coming off, with a couple of them making, you know, not necessarily having to make 150, but doing even like what Travis Head did the other day, making 60 in quick time. If you get a couple of those, then you set up the middle order to build up an imposing score.
And the other side of it, we've talked a fair bit through the tournament about the psychological importance of Kohli making hundreds and us getting a better understanding through this competition of how symbolically important it is that he gets to raise the bat, and what that does for morale around the country and inside the team, and belief, and Kohli's 100 count meaning more than it might to Australians, right? And we're understanding that cultural difference. What if they get Kohli early? I mean, Hazelwood feels the one to me who could do that. I know it didn't happen in the group game. They got 3 wickets early. Kohli wasn't one of them. Goes on to play a worldly of an innings with KL Rahul, and they chase it down in 45 overs. That was a wonderful chasing performance. But if they do get Kohli early, if they can go bang, bang, get one of the openers and Kohli when the ball's still new. And Hazelwood feels like the right weapon for that, given how consistent he is, how brilliantly he bowled against South Africa up top. He's only gone at 4.5 runs and over through the competition. That will change the energy. I mean, that will silence the crowd, literally, if Kohli's dismissed early. So Australia need to think in those terms. And it's not as though he can't be dismissed early. This guy is not a machine. He was out cheaply to England, and Australia have enjoyed success against Kohli at different points through his career. So it's not a foregone conclusion he'll make somewhere between 50 and 120, right? You know, everything starts again when they arrive at the ground tomorrow. And there was so much attention on him reaching his 50th, and so it is, and that's fine. But he's still got to wake up tomorrow morning, and he's still a human being.
And start again. You know, that's been the most impressive thing about Kohli, is how it almost looks like he doesn't have to start his innings again. He just comes out and picks up where he left off. But more than 700 runs in the World Cup, you can look at that two ways. You can say, well, he's inked in for a big score, or you can say he's probably got all these runs already and he's due a low score at some point. You know, probability might tell. That's the really interesting bit for me, I think. You know, say Australia are bowling first, and like you say, that couple early. Also, how does the Indian team recover from that point as well? Because everything's gone to plan, just about. Like, maybe except for making that 229 against England, which looked like it shouldn't be enough, but ended up being more than enough. Everything has worked out pretty much as they wanted it to after those early 3 wickets in the Australia game. Everything's gone to plan. You know, Rohit makes the fast runs early. Kohli comes in and runs the innings. The others bat around those two. Shreyas does his thing. Suryakumar Yadav chips in here or there if required. He's barely been needed, to be honest, with the bat, aside from a few swings. It's all worked. It's all and it's worked in a similar way every time, and that's I think the point where, so no doubt about it, India should win this game. They probably will win this game because across the board, player for player, they've it's not just that they have really good players. A lot of these are the same players who were going around 4 years ago, sometimes even 8 years ago, but they're just all humming at exactly the right time. They're all at the peak together. And there's this incredible sense of momentum, especially with that bowling attack where Bumrah is starting it off and he is literally a genius with the ball. Siraj is potentially the weak point, but does still have damaging bursts. And then Shami coming on just being, you know, unholy in terms of how good he is as a first change bowler. They should win. The only way they can't, I think, is if Australia have that possibility, that advantage of being unpredictable. Because what India does is pretty predictable, and they run through the perfect performance time and again. If Australia can knock that off balance at some point, that will be the thing, that might be the thing where India then go, oh, hang on, we're not quite sure how to cope with this, because they haven't had to come back from adversity, really, through any of the games they've played in this World Cup.
Another really small thing, but I think not completely irrelevant, is that India chased in their first 5 games and set tallies in their next 5. So it's actually been a while since they've had to chase. And of course, Australia will want to engineer that scenario where they bat first. I'm certain they won't want to let... I don't think the toss is as important as it was in the semis, don't get me wrong. But I think that the match up where Australia get to bat first and let the game build into something of a rhythm. And look, let's not overplay that point either. Australia was 74 for one against India in the group game, then all out for 199. They only went at 3.5 runs and over in the middle stages, but they hadn't clicked at that point. They were still finding what their method was, and they've kind of found that over the last month and a bit since they lost their second game of the tournament to South Africa. They've been faultless since then. Who started that collapse off? Jadeja. Now, Jadeja's a funny old duck when it comes to his career against Australia. Took 3 for 28 from 10 in that group game and was perfect. He bowled so well to Australia to set upon that collapse. But in one day
Steve
cricket,
Smith as, wicket. I was just watching back some replays of that earlier today, and I mean, it is a beautiful piece of bowling.
Yeah, ball of the tournament just about. And to consider, he played his role there. Jadeja hasn't been a big part of the tournament for India. Took a five for it, but hasn't like. It's been about the quicks, right? They've bowled so well under lights and so on, defending tallies. But if, you know, Jadeja against Australia averages 53 in one-day cricket, but that means nothing because in Test cricket, it feels like that's the more relevant comparison point because in Test cricket, he's been such a dominant force in India, taking wickets at like 15 in that country in Border Gavaskar contest. And something about the psychological hurdle that Jadeja presents Australian batting lineups, I think that's an important part of this. And the other fact is that they find it so hard to get him away. So if they try and go through the gears in the middle overs, that's where it's going to require, if batting first, Maxwell coming off. Because he can accelerate in ways that other players can't from a standing start. The joy of Maxwell is that it's impossible to draw a through line between one performance to the next. That's why we've enjoyed his career so very much, is that it is a roller coaster. And I don't know, maybe the fact that he missed out and looked vulnerable against South Africa means that it's more likely that he might play well against these Indian bowlers who he knows so well, having been in the IPL since he was a pup.
Potentially, but I think Kuldeep Yadav is the trump there. So it's the left arm wrist spin commonality where Maxwell looked confused against Kuldeep in the first game and got bowled trying a big shot. Against Tabraiz Shamsi, looked confused, got bowled trying a big shot. Left arm wrist spin, turning back into him. It's unusual. You don't see a lot of it. Those are the two teams that have had it in this tournament, and they've got him very cheaply between them on those two occasions. And then Jadeja, I think Jadeja's more dangerous against Australia than any other team by now because of the history, because all these players have played against him in Test cricket so much. You know, Steve Smith will be out there thinking harder about facing Jadeja than somebody else would. Manus Labuschagne will be doing the same. Off the top of my head, is it 89 Test wickets he's taken against Australia in a relative handful of matches? What, 20 Tests maybe, not even. He's been a remarkable performer against Australia specifically, and so that makes him more dangerous in a 50-over game than he would be against just about anybody else.
Yeah, he's a big game player, Jadeja. Hasn't had to bat an awful lot in the tournament, nor of any of the Indian lower order.
Like, but he's done it well
When called upon, but they've made more runs and taken more wickets than anyone, and their lower order's not been tested, which is a great problem to have. But again, there's that idea that Australia's lower order have had to do quite a bit of heavy lifting.
It would be great if that came into it. It'd be great in terms of the contest, right? In terms of a good game, if both lower orders were called upon at some point during the game while it was in the balance, because Australia's have had a test, whereas, you know, Shami or Bumrah coming out at number eight, that's a pretty vulnerable bottom four.
Yeah, my overall sense is that Australia are pretty calm because they probably didn't expect to be here, right? You know, you go back to the start of the comp and it's all about, are they going to be bundled out in a similar way to what England eventually were? You know, do they have the right combination? Have they got a group that's good enough to compete at the very top in 50-over cricket? All of these questions were unanswered. In a way, maybe they still are. And as it so often is the case, the final result will dictate how the history is written.
There was one good bit that Pat Cummins in a press conference is very straight down the line. He tries to give very little that can be taken where someone can get a grab and take it away. But one thing that was interesting is he was asked about, you know, when Sri Lanka are 120 for none and you've lost two on the trot and you're getting smashed around, did it cross your mind that we might be bombing out here? And he actually said, yeah, it did. At the time he said no, you know, sort of after that Sri Lanka game, we have good players and we were confident that we'd be able to pull it back. And today he was like, yeah, okay, actually, yes, fair enough. I was worried at that stage.
Yeah, of course he was. I mean, how could he not be? This is going to sound like a weird observation, but it almost feels like a bit of a free hit for Australia here. Like, no one expects them to win. It's going to be a coronation of sorts tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be.
It's meant to be the crowning moment of Indian supremacy in so many ways across the global game. Tomorrow is all set up for that moment where that program we were doing yesterday, Jeff, where one of the pundits spoke of Kohli, being held up on the arms of Shubman Gill and Ishan Kishan holding up Rohit Sharma, akin to what it was with Kohli holding up Tendulkar back in the 2011 World Cup final when they were successful there. This is what tomorrow is all about. Meanwhile, Australia is something of a sleeping giant, right? I mean, you don't win this tournament five times without having something about your cricketing DNA that sees you win these things. Even that T20 World Cup win 2 years ago where they were gone. You know, they got pumped by England. And 3 weeks later, they're holding up the World Cup trophy because they clicked at the right time. India will be mindful of that. But I reckon the Australian side come into this knowing that it's kind of all upside. And that's an unusual place for Australians to be when typically going into games like this, they are the expected victor.
And they've got seven players from that 2015 World Cup campaign who will be in the 11. So there were five who played in the 2015 final, and then Marsh and Cummins both played during the tournament but didn't play in the final. So seven players who've got a World Cup winner's medal in the 50-over format alone will be in that 11. So, you know, it's not for nothing. They're still the lesser chance.
Including Stark, of course, who played such a massive role in that World Cup final, taking McCullum's wicket in the first over, which set the course of that decider at the MCG. Very different world then, of course, very different conditions. But, you know, they have that muscle memory of stepping up and making it count when it matters most. Jeff, before we say goodbye today, and we should do that soon, we don't need to talk any more about a game that hasn't started yet, we should come to the Final Word Hall of Fame, which is brought to you by Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. There's no Hall of Fame per se. There are a couple of things I wanted to know.
I've got one for you.
We'll get there. First of all, instead of telling you about Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City today, I'm going to simply refer to social media. Dave of Mark Latham fame. If you don't follow Twitter user Mesut Ozil, you should. He is one of the great posters. His words, not mine. You can't say advertising doesn't work. Someone was at work today talking about something they'd done on a trip, and I mindlessly replied, oh, they've got that at Westfield London. That is proof that it's cutting through. Someone said this to me at the pub last night as well, that they've been thinking about going to Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City just as a day out because they've heard us talk about it so much over the last 7 weeks. And why wouldn't you want to?
Why wouldn't
you? Biggest shopping centre in the cosmos, Europe, including the two black holes.
Biggest Christmas tree in the cosmos,
and I've seen the Christmas tree and had its lights turned on and all the rest of it. So we'll have more about Westfield tomorrow. And Jeff, I think a worthy addition to the Final Word Hall of Fame would be the 35-page document, pacing through every single component of the pre, mid, post game ceremonies. I wonder the extent to which that'll be modified if India don't win at the end. There'll be so many light shows. Every drinks break will take 5 minutes as they have the lasers out and all the rest of it. So it won't be an early finish. But Jeff, what's been on your mind?
What's your name? What have you had? Reach for the lasers. So just scrolling through that document, humility is not a strong point here. As we close the ICC Men's Cricket World Cup 2023, we create a four-part ceremony as India bids farewell to the world at the biggest finals of the greatest World Cup at the largest cricket stadium in the world. It's almost like there's a slight preoccupation with being the biggest and the best. They've got the greatest World Cup ever. It's good that that's been officially gazetted. This is on ICC letterhead, by the way.
Doesn't Juan Antonio Samaranch decide whether it's the greatest World Cup ever?
He does.
Until Juan Antonio Samaranch says it, it isn't real.
Get the Ouija board out and get him on the line. Get to, I assume he's no longer with us.
I think he's passed away. Yeah,
he's gone to the big rotting party in the sky. He's up there with Silvio Berlusconi somewhere. But the best bit, the real standout bit for me in this document was this. They're going to have, and this is quite a nice idea, I must say, parade of champions, a moment in history. For the first time, World Cup winning captains are honoured in the biggest ever arena in cricket, at the biggest ever final the world has witnessed. So they had to get that in there a second time. But they're going to have, and it says this specifically, unique assembly of all World Cup winning captains. And there's a list of pictures, right? There are 10 pictures. Now, we've had 12 men's 50-over World Cups. So Clive Lloyd only gets one, even though he captained twice. So Ponting's got two pictures for the two that he captained. Clive Lloyd's only got one. Fair enough. They put the pictures in rows. There are two rows of five, right? So they couldn't maybe it was just a graphic design thing, hard to get 12 in there, or you couldn't get 11 in there because they've got, okay, there's Clive Lloyd, cool, there's Kapil Dev, 83, no worries, there's Alan Border, 87, cool, there's Steve Waugh, there's a couple of Ricky Pontings, there's an MS Dhoni, Michael Clark, Owen Morgan, there's Arjuna Ranatunga coming just after Alan Border, that's weird. Wasn't there a World Cup in between those two? Oh, well, Imran Khan's not there, is he? Imran Khan's in jail at the moment, so he's not going to be attending. The text literally says, unique assembly of all World Cup winning captains, and then the photo parade has just airbrushed him out. Like, Joseph Stalined him out. Imran Khan, 92 didn't happen. Cornered Tigers, none of it. None of it existed. We hallucinated all of it. 12 World Cups, only 10 of them have pictures. Sorry, Imran, you're in the delete files of history. You're on the cutting room floor.
My passion is graphic design. That's what I'm thinking when I'm seeing that.
It's unbelievable.
That says more. Unbelievable.
It
says more than anything ever really could, couldn't it? Oh. And I know people will get grumpy in the comments that we've said that. But you know, we can't be held accountable for people sooking in the comments. That's not how this job works. We have to say what we think. The big dick and the little dick are umpiring tomorrow, Jeff.
That
I was
is
thrilled
the,
to see
the
this.
Dicks the fi- together at
they,
last.
They really are the final word umpires, aren't they? Mm. Kettlebrough for obvious reasons. Yes, we know Kettlebrough. We like Kettlebrough. Then Illingworth because he was there at the World Cup final in 92. Big dick, little dick. And also with Kettlebrough, imagine the furor. Mm. Imagine the blow up if he gives a decision that is counter to India's interests, given all the conspiracy theories about Richard Kettlebrough online and his alleged bias against India and all the rest of it. If something went the other way tomorrow and Kettlebrough was in charge, all fucking hell's going to break loose, and I'm here for that.
Yep, and Joel will be in the box. He's got the video tools. Joel's third umpire. Yeah, so
bloody
I'm not
hell,
sure.
That's a big call.
That is. A
I'm
big
not
call
sure if I want Joel interpreting the technology personally.
Well, yeah, if they're going, you know, top three, if that's the way they're doing it, it's interesting that things have wound up that way.
Joel.
Yep. So, Richard Kettlebrough was out there in the middle for a long time chatting to the ground staff today. And Chris Gaffney, what a beast. He was just running laps of the ground. It was pretty hot. It was pretty sticky. And he started out running with another dude and then just burned him off and started lapping him as he was just sprinting laps of the oval today. So the Gaff is in good shape if called upon. I suppose he's going to be fourth official.
Are we going to see David Beckham tomorrow, Dua Lipa?
Haven't got any vibe about that. There's nothing specifically about Dua Lipa in the incredibly extensive document telling me what's going to happen tomorrow. But, oh, you'll enjoy this as well. They're getting the Modi float back out again, the car that they drove him around. But they're not putting him in it. They're putting a musician in it. What's his name? Pritam, India's number one music director with his entourage of 500 dancers. And the mock-up here has Pritam in what is almost exactly the Modi mobile with the cricket bats and the fake stumps and whatever behind it, but it's a bit zhuzhed up with some World Cup colours. Oh. And Pritam is standing in it in a very bad Photoshop while some dancers stand around him. So look forward to that. Whatever happened to the Modi mobile, I know you tried to buy it. You couldn't seal the deal. They've obviously taken it away. They've renovated it. It's been zhuzhed up. It's been in the shop. It's had the dints dinged out of it. It's had the staple gun on to put some new carpet in. And it is ready to go to fall apart 5 minutes after the game like it did last time.
Zhuzhed up, another very Australian term. The Pope mobile, the Modi mobile that he went around with in Albo. Shastri said he was going to get that for me. I've got a bone to pick with Ravi. He'll be busy tomorrow, though, leading the commentary team. I see it's the biggest commentary team I've ever seen assembled. About 16 people are going to get on air at some point. So I hope they all enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it as well, Jeff, doing it on radio. That's it for us. Our preview has been for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. Enjoy the World Cup final. Don't get too angry. It's only a game of cricket, please.
It's just cricket. Okay. It's just cricket,
guys.
It's
all going to be okay on Monday morning. Fine. No matter what happens, you're going to be all right.
Everything's going to be fine. We'll see you soon.
Bye.